The following podcast has been made possible by the generous members of our Patreons. So if you like our podcast, you want to join in and contribute and find mountains of other content while you're there, join in at patreon.com/IanBoldsworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Loopholes, episode 3, a weekly discussion podcast about all things esoterotic. I am Ian Boldsworth, hello.
And I am Dr. Kate Sherrell, hello.
Officially Dr. Kate Sherrell.
Officially. Got a certificate like I've done my swimming badges.
So you got your doctorate this week?
Yes.
Officially?
Officially.
Congratulations. Second congratulations are in order. It's your birthday today.
It is.
Happy birthday to you today. Recording on your birthday.
I know. What a treat.
That's the way to do things. I can't remember the last time I didn't work on my birthday.
Yeah.
So it's commitment.
I know, but I was expecting a bit more sympathy from you, but fine.
Okay, well, sorry to hear it's your birthday. Thank you for all your comments on last week's episode, episode 2, where we discussed psychics.
Yeah, that went well, didn't it?
And all that malarkey. Now, you feel... behind closed doors.
Yes.
You feel like you got a hammering on the comments on
my
Patreon.
Oh, I feel bruised.
Do you really?
Yeah.
For what reason?
I think definitely it's on me. I think maybe the way I was explaining my unbridled and absolutely unhealthy adoration of Uri Geller came across as I am validating all the magic men.
I think I need to take some responsibility for that. Because I think I hammered the respect thing so much.
Yeah, but it's also because I am, like you, incredibly petty, but also incredibly petulant.
Right, okay.
So if you'd said, you know, do you respect Uri Geller? And I'd say, well, you know, I just find him really interesting.
Yeah.
Because he's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like this amazing bit of 90s nostalgia for me.
Yeah.
So I like collecting all of the tat.
Okay.
Is there a Uri Geller board game? Yes, there are several. I've tracked them down.
Yeah, but, I mean, but do you respect him then?
You see? You see? So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to double down on this.
Yeah, I do that.
Even though it's completely contrary to
So you're not going to...
I'm just horrible.
In this episode, are you going to double down on loving Uri Geller?
Yeah.
Even though you've been heavily criticised for
it. Yeah, even though this might be the last podcast I ever make.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think, genuinely. And again, you can... Because we've spoken about this a little bit this week, but I've certainly not said this to you. So can I tell you what I think? And you can tell me if I'm right. I think the disharmony of that is perhaps in part due to people not knowing enough about you yet.
Yeah,
potentially. Yeah, so I would say that your work and the brand you're building yourself, so Burials and Beyond, is something that you set up yourself that you weren't really public facing on as a person. It was a brand thing.
Yes.
And I think it's a relatively recent thing with you to be the face of your brand as well.
Yeah.
So I think... And again, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think the parallels with Uri Geller are actually quite strong, even though the content is in no way comparable.
Mm-hmm. My main interest in Uri Geller, my fascination, I say fascination more than interest, because it is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
This man has had a career for decades.
Yeah.
From going on TV and bending cutlery. Yeah.
But that's a small part of what he did.
Well, it's a very small part of
what
he
did. Back in the 70s and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That was the hook that everything was hung on.
Yes. And then there was different divination things. And he did so much on TV that was adored and debunked in equal measure.
Yeah.
Much like so many 19th century mediums that equally fascinate me.
Yeah.
I just find it amazing that people can make these enormous claims of having special powers, whether that's talking to the dead or being able to find minerals through psychic powers, as Uri himself said.
Right.
And then to be proven to be fraudulent or to not be able to manifest these powers when it really matters.
Yeah.
Like in the case of mediums whose spirit guides were unveiled to just be them running around in their knickers.
Yeah, okay.
Versus Uri, who was shown on live TV to not be able to use his powers because James Randi, who was mentioned a lot in the comments, came in and said, no, give him the props like this and he won't be able to do it if he's faking. So it's these people that have been proven to be fake, making this up as they go along, still building a career on these claims that have been disproven again and again and again, but the claims themselves have kind of become greater than themselves.
I guess some people find that unpalatable, though, I suppose, when, you know, when you, when it's like Milli Vanilli, isn't it? You know, I think they find it unpalatable that something can be exposed
as... Oh, completely. I get
as
that.
As fraudulent.
Yeah, I get it completely.
Yet still be successful.
Yes.
So yeah. I think the parallels I'm drawing as somebody who knows you is I know that you've worked really hard on your own to build your brand. Now, you're not making fraudulent claims.
No.
You're just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's what maybe got lost for some people last week. You were talking about him. You weren't saying it was true.
Yeah, I think not believing in the validity of something doesn't reduce my enjoyment of it.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, you know what? I'm going to go out there. I'm going to say to you right now, I don't think that Uri Geller can find mineral deposits with his mind. Am I still going to play his board game where you can play with little magnets to find mineral deposits in Russia?
Yeah.
Damn right I am. Because it is ridiculous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Exactly.
I agree.
But I
think agree. You playing a board game pretending you have magic powers is ridiculous. I do agree with that.
But I think there's a big difference here with frauds. And I am very, very interested in fraudulent claims, especially in relation to mediums and things like that. That is my main shtick. It's kind of historical 19th century, 18th century mediums and mystics. My interest there is primarily academic, and I find it really interesting how people were portrayed when they claimed these things and how they ascended to kind of social power. But also, Uri Geller, yes, he was a con artist, yes, he was manipulative.
Has he died?
Oh god, that's bad, isn't it? Actually,
you're speaking in past tense.
That's really bad. Can I say that again?
No.
If Uri Geller dies after this, I'm going to be inconsolable.
Yeah, but you could claim to have some sort of psychic power.
Yeah, did I psychically kill Uri Geller? So I don't really believe in 90% of the things that I'm interested in. It's because they're so overblown, because they're so left field that I find them interesting. But with Uri Geller, there was a few comments saying that he's, you know, he's a fraud. He's, this leaves a unpleasant taste in the mouth. Completely get it. Because it's not a nice thing to think that someone's been taken advantage of. But I think with Geller, personally, and I get how people would have very strong varying views on this, but I think that his exploitation, if we take it that way, is for purely entertainment means.
Well, I don't know. When I read some of those comments, I don't know what it is he's done. Because I always thought he was like just a bit of a buffoon. But I'm not well read on Uri Geller. So I've always personally found him to be a bit of a figure of fun.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. I think the worst things he's done is lie to people for his own fame gain.
Yeah.
He hasn't done like Sylvia Brown did that we mentioned the other week, who led people on wild goose chases for missing persons cases.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is reprehensible.
Yeah.
And I also will say I've got some of Sylvia Brown's books because I'm interested in her and how she can justify, at least to herself, these claims.
Oh, I get that completely. You've got to read Mein Kampf to understand where this all came from.
Exactly.
Metaphorically speaking. Yeah,
you can have books on horrific things, but not be a supporter of genocide.
But you did say, by the way, in that podcast, on the other side of it, you did say that one day you are going to be best friends.
I want to meet Uri Geller.
Yeah.
I want to meet him so bad. Yeah. I want to go to his museum in Jaffa so bad.
Right.
I want to see the biggest spoon in the world.
Yeah.
And I will not rest until I do.
Yeah. All that good work you just did.
Oh, God, it's happened again, hasn't it?
Completely undone. No, I get it. I personally take responsibility because I didn't allow you, because I was so busy being a smart ass, I didn't allow you to state your case. So I think, really, moving forward, you will have to just say... like, quite pragmatically.
Yeah.
So-and-so, who I don't believe is magic. Don't know what he's done. What has he done? What's his thing that he's done? Is there a thing?
He's very litigious. I think that's what a lot of people remember him for being. He tried to...
This is the... Just heard the Kate said, remember him for being. This is the Uri Geller...
We're not having a memorial podcast for Uri Geller.
I think Kate might have inside information.
My spirit guide has told me he's feeling peaky.
But, and then she's going to get sued by you
next week. I would
for
frame it.
Damaging his career by letting people think he was dead.
But Uri Geller was... No, Uri Geller is very litigious. But I can't say is because I don't know if he has put any claims in recent years. But apart from all the randy stuff, like the big claims of defamation...
I mean, even taking someone to court for defamation of character doesn't actually invalidate the claim they've made. So someone can say he's a fake, and you could potentially win in court for defamation of character, But that doesn't mean that you're not a fake. That just means that the thing they've said has damaged your career. Yeah. That's all it means.
Yeah. See, there are so many legal loopholes.
Loopholes,
here.
We're back!
Yay! I don't think Yuri's a top guy for doing that.
Yeah, okay.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's why it's just overblown claim after weird legal case, after Spoon, after QVC jewellery, after self-help book. His career does not make sense.
But your stock in trade is telling these stories.
Yeah.
Not validating the behaviours.
Yeah.
So that's the clarification that I feel has been remiss in not being put forward. And I take responsibility for that because of the times when you could have made made it a bit clearer. I was so busy saying, respect! Hey, welcome to Loopholes, episode 3.
So while that was going on in your Patreon comments,
yeah.
I also had to deal with you having issues with my most recent Patreon
content. There
was
nothing to do. Right, first off, let's get this clear.
Right.
No one was attacking anyone, either in the comments or my messages to you.
You are.
I was joining in the discussion.
Well, I wrote this lovely little cheery piece about Disney.
Yeah.
About the original Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Yeah.
And how in this ride, in place of a lot of the skeletons...
Yeah.
That the Imagineers...
Skellingtons, it's pronounced.
Oh, is it? Sorry. In place of the original Skellingtons in the ride.
Make sure you say that when you present any papers or anything like that.
Oh, well, I've got a few coming up soon.
Anything academic that you do, make sure you do say Skellingtons.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a common mistake people make to call it Skeletons.
Okay. Oh,
skeletons, they say.
Well,
and it's actually Skellingtons.
Right, well, I'm glad I know before these conferences start.
You're welcome.
That in the original ride, it seems that actual human remains were used.
They used real-life skeletons.
They used real-life skeletons in this ride.
Yeah.
And I referenced it.
Yes.
I asked some friends that work with human remains.
Okay.
And work in museums across the country.
Yeah.
And you didn't like it.
No, I'll tell you what. Well, here we go. So this is actually a good example.
Yes, okay.
I didn't not like it because I thought you were wrong. I understood that you were reporting the story as it is told. So what the story was that when Pirates of the Caribbean ride opened originally, they used real-life skeletons inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, however many years later, they made a decision to remove the human remains that were in that ride.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the story.
Yes.
And there is speculation now that they didn't remove all of them, that some of the skeletons or bits of skeletons that are still in that ride are actually human remains.
Yes, I think this is more... There's no argument with us here.
Yeah.
I think both of us are kind of on the same page of a lot of the contemporary rumours are really just to put the willies up people.
I mean, don't turn this into a sex thing. But I think potentially it's one of those things where if you look at it, there is a loophole there, which is that if Disney made the decision, you presume on ethical grounds or moral grounds or whatever it was, to remove the original skeletons,
mm-hmm.
if indeed there were original skeletons in it, which is apparently a matter of record that they were.
Yeah, and I would argue that that would be common practice
that's
for
plausible.
The time.
Okay,
for
fine,
the time,
fine.
Not nowadays.
Okay, I'll turn a blind eye to that then, that's fine. What I won't turn a blind eye to is they made a decision to remove them, but left a couple.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me.
I think it's so embedded in, like, Disney Park lore now.
Yeah.
People want these kind of unfinished mysteries.
Yeah, there's loads of them with Disney there. There's tons of them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bullet hole in the glass at the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland.
Yeah.
I'm always a bit suspicious of that.
Exactly.
That somebody
shot
the glass.
There's no proof, but it's sort of an interesting little snippet of information when you go and visit. But with the use of human remains in, like, entertainment parks, particularly in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, there's a real moral conflict there, even reporting on it, because when you talk about human remains and the ethical display of human remains, it's an absolute minefield. It's a whole specialism in itself nowadays.
Right.
How, in a museum context, you display human remains that were either donated to the institution or were obtained, like so many medical skeletons were, from...
grave robbing.
In quite unpleasant ways, essentially from grave robbing in India with the lowest caste of society there. That's where most of our medical skeletons came from. And it's horrible and it's unsavoury, but that is the reality of medical skeletons and the skeletons from UCLA that Disney would have used in their rides, because in the 60s, they were seen very literally, objectively. They were seen as objects, like, well, we want accurate human remains, we'll just use these. They're not from anyone we know.
So what's the argument, then, that they left some behind? What proof are people offering to say that one's a real one?
A lot of it seems to be fired up by Disney bloggers that kind of photograph the rides, you know, in all weathers with flashes on and things like that, and try and find little snippets.
Yeah.
And there seems to be like three or four that have been earmarked as they've left these behind.
Yeah. Again, so the loophole I'm applying to this, what doesn't make sense to me about that is it's Disney Parks. Imagineers at Disney Parks aren't going, I tell you what, I can build you the Millennium Falcon, but I can't do bones. Just can't make them. They look terrible when I try and make bones. They look awful. They're some of the most skilled artistic people on Earth.
That it doesn't make sense to me either, really, why they would use medical skeletons in the first place, apart from just speed.
Yeah, speed.
Like, you can go down the road, get a load and say, right, get them, you can focus on making the pirates.
Yeah, okay, so I'm willing to accept that. But even if they got just one skeleton...
Yeah.
You can cast from it. You can just, like, make a mould and so that it can be casts of an original skeleton.
Mm.
And you don't have to remove them on ethical grounds, necessarily.
Yes.
They'd have just done that. So, do you know what? Maybe, then, maybe what's happened at Disney, when people say, that is the original one, look at these two photos, it's identical. Maybe they just took a mould of it.
Yeah, but with the ones that people say, the Imagineers, who are notoriously clumsy and haphazard in their work.
Can't do skeletons.
You can't do skeletons.
Can do a big mouse.
With the skeletons that they've left behind.
Yeah.
If you have looked...
Ducks, not a problem.
If you've looked at human remains, you'll look up close and go, that clearly is fake.
Right.
So it's probably not an original skeleton.
Yeah, but
the myth is so interesting.
But you've just got to make it clear. When you talk about these things, you've got to say, I don't think they are real skeletons. Otherwise... People like me are going to come down very hard on you.
But do you respect the skeletons?
So what are we going to talk about today? What's the topic that we're going to discuss today? And I guess really reclaim a bit of credibility after your Geller loving. So what's today's topic?
Crop circles.
You've blown it. You've just blown it straight away. So before we do anything...
Okay.
What are crop circles, please?
Crop circles are essentially... enormous patterns made by flattening crops that are mainly cereals. In the UK, particularly in the southwest near Neolithic sites like Stonehenge and Avebury Stone Circle, there were spates of these in the 70s, 80s and 90s. Enormous weird patterns appearing in fields that were believed to be produced by alien craft. Or landing. Alien intelligence.
Landing on them. Or...
depends on which UFO expert you ask.
Either way.
Yes.
Very important question now.
Okay.
Do you, Dr. Kate Cherrell.
Yes.
Do you think they have anything whatsoever to do with alien spacecraft landing on the Earth?
No.
Is that a categorical answer?
I do not believe that crop circles were made by alien spacecraft.
Am I forcing you to say that, or are you saying that by choice?
You are not forcing me to say it.
Right, this is your own free will.
This is my own free will. Right, I have an interest in aliens and crop circles, but I don't necessarily believe that they're popping down to Wiltshire and parking their UFO in a field.
And your use of the word necessarily blew it.
Oh, God.
You have to say it definitively, or people will say...
Aliens have got better things to do than to visit Avebury. There's nothing there.
Now
there's
you've lost them all.
There's a gift shop.
Now
there's
you're talking about
else.
Aliens being a thing. Now you've lost everyone now. Too many caveats in your speech. So what do you want to talk about then with crop circles? What are we going to report? What are you going to tell me about? Because I don't know much about it. All I know is I think it's nonsense.
Yeah.
And all I know was that there was a pop star. Who was your man?
Reg Presley.
Reg Presley.
Yes.
I remember Reg Presley being very vocal about crop circles.
Yes.
He's away now, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he died in 2013.
So I remember that. I don't remember it being 70s and 80s. I remember it being in the 90s for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Which I would say is a loophole in itself. I would say, well, the fact that it was in that short period of time... and now doesn't happen.
There are continued crop circle sightings. And.
But are they considered to be alien anymore, or is it just
the
now?
Thing is, the press aren't interested anymore. The novelty is worn off. And so there are a lot of dedicated groups called croppies who still study them and believe in the legitimacy of crop circles as signs of alien visitation.
Are they really?
Not necessarily alien visitation, but alien communication.
Isn't there always an issue, and I've said this quite a lot, and this is like a general loophole, this in every one of these sorts of stories, really, which is that... if it's, well, it's Occam's razor, isn't it? Again, it's that thing of, could it be this that's plausible and that is a more understandable thing? Yes, it could be that. It's like, well, then I reckon it's that.
Yeah. I think crop circles are a really good example of the word impossible being thrown about incorrectly.
Okay.
Mainly by the media, because, like you say, in the 90s, it seemed like every week in a tabloid there was new crop circles, whatever. I mean, this, in the 90s as well, was the time of the X-Files, the times of the squishy alien baby things that you're meant to stick together and then try and make a baby because someone in the playground told you once.
Right, okay.
Of inflatable aliens, of resurgence of interest in Roswell.
And is that from X-Files? Do you think that's where it came from?
Not necessarily, no, because crop circles were a thing before the X-Files.
No, I mean the resurgence of interest in it, so the whole thing...
Oh, definitely. I think with, you know, the millennium looming and a greater interest in, you know, the truth is out there.
Yeah.
There was a revival of interest in... aliens at this time, mainly through media. And so it would make sense that if crop circles were appearing, if you were reporting on them, they'd then appeal to mass media, they'd appeal to the masses.
Yeah.
Because they'd tap into a kind of current popular interest.
I wonder how many people thought they were aliens in reality.
Yeah.
You know, like got scared like it was War of the Worlds on the radio again. Yeah. You know, I wonder how many people were actually scared by that.
Well, I think a lot would have been.
I remember writing a thing on Patreon not that long ago, well, maybe a year or so ago, when there were a lot of reports of monoliths appearing in places. I felt like it needed to be said because it was quite a frightening idea, really. And this is at a time when a lot of people, I guess, were right-minded people as well, by the way, I guess were contemplating, is this the end of the world?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
when there's
absolutely.
A global pandemic going around and stuff. Is this us? Is this the end of it?
Yeah.
And I think to throw into the mix with that, this kind of tabloid story about monoliths, so these big square blocks that supposedly just appeared in certain places.
Yes, it's the same thing, they just appear. Yeah. And it's that lack of human intervention, that sense of we're not in control of our environment that kind of breeds this uncanny feeling.
Yeah.
That's probably why monoliths might not exactly remain in kind of popular culture memory indefinitely, but... crop circles certainly will, because it did tap into that same fear, the fear of the intent.
But I don't judge crop circles in the same way because of the time that it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the monoliths thing, when they were being reported as cropping up everywhere, pardon the pun, I felt that that was a really, really nasty, horrible thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't a novelty story. That was the sort of thing somebody could have done away with themselves over because they got so scared.
Yeah, to play with people's fears when they're at the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah,
was horrific. Agree with you. Absolutely horrific.
Yeah. No matter whether or not it was a social experiment or an art installation or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, read the room.
Yeah, well, it's like we said last week about something else. It's just not cute, that.
Yeah.
So I'll give crop circles a pass on that because it was a different social time.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to know, that's what I'm saying. I'd be interested to know who was scared by it and how scared were they by it.
Yeah.
Like the War of the Worlds thing that I mentioned, I think most people know about that. When the radio series was first broadcast, Orson Welles did it on the radio, and it was broadcast just into people's homes.
Yeah, as if it was
And from all
real.
Accounts, people lost their minds. Mm. I think there's a bit of legend that comes into this, by the way. I'm not sure it was quite as panicked as everyone says.
Well, it's the
says.
Same with Ghost Watch.
Yeah, okay, similar thing. So I'd be interested to know who it frightened, how many people thought it was either the indentations from an alien spacecraft, which was, as I recall, the popularised version of it, that it was the underside of an alien ship that had squashed where it had landed.
Yes. Well, theories seem to have kind of developed over the years. But really, the first recorded UFO crop circle incident was in about 1966 in Australia, where a farmer supposedly saw a saucer rise up and fly away. And he went to inspect, you know, where that was. He saw the debris and he saw the big indentation in, like, the flattened swamp grass. The press picked that up. Once that story was out, then people started getting ideas.
Yeah, okay.
To ruin that story of that circular indentation. It was generally regarded to be just animal behaviour. But generally, when they came to the UK especially, this is where we get the impossible word thrown about a lot.
Yeah.
That they were so huge that... to see how perfect they were, you could only really see them accurately from the air. So they were impossible to have been made by humans.
Oh, I see.
Because the grass and the cereals, they weren't broken. They were bent.
Tony Hart used to do it every week on Take Heart. Neil Buchanan later on did it on his Heart Attack thing, where he'd draw something, you'd be like, what? I don't know what this is. And the camera would pull back and it would show
it
what the image...
Yeah, big Heart Attack,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't impossible. I saw him do it before, of course, before he passed away.
Oh, God.
And the other thing that I remember, and you, again, might know better than me on this, but as I recall it, and I must say, by the way, I must state the caveat,
mm-hmm.
I've not recalled this intensely.
Yeah.
This is just my general memory.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There was reports of crop circles. It was on the news and in papers and stuff and all that business. And then quite quickly, in what felt like quite a short period of time, they started to get more elaborate.
Yes.
Like the original ones was just a circle with some little circles that could have been the stands of the UFO or whatever. And then they started getting really quite intricate.
Mm.
Like almost like aliens had gone, hey, they're looking at our undercarriages here. Let's set that proper posh ship down. Yeah. Show them that as well.
Better make an effort.
Yeah. You know, there's quite a glaring thing going on there, isn't it? Where people are one-upping.
Oh, completely.
They're going, well, we can make an even better one than
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So although they really started in the 70s,
yeah.
they escalated through the 80s and then even more so in the 90s once the media reported them in areas like Wiltshire and Hampshire.
Yeah.
And if you can remember in that time how many crop circles were appearing.
I remember it being loads.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever seeing one. But then again, can't see them from down below, can you not? Because that's impossible.
It's impossible. One thing that I really like about the British crop circle story, at least, is that it was later revealed all crop circles from the 70s to about 87 were created by two men who were just having a laugh.
All of them?
Apparently.
I mean, there must have been some people.
There were people having a go.
With a rope, you know.
Yeah, or just a strimmer going, look, Marion, the bean.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The biggies were claimed by two blokes called Doug Bower and Dave Chorley.
Have they said that themselves? They said they did it?
Yeah.
They were caught?
Not to my knowledge, but it was 1991, so they'd been doing it for years.
Right.
And it was only then that they confessed and they admitted to making something ridiculous like 200
That's impossible.
Crop circles.
That's impossible.
It's impossible.
No way.
So I don't know why they're claiming it.
Well, I'm anticipating that. So is the counterclaim not then like, well, they can claim it all they want. You know what I mean? The people that believe in all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Are they not going to turn around and go, well, just because they've said they did them doesn't mean it wasn't alien crap.
Yeah, of course. That's always going to be an argument.
Because I could say I did it.
Yeah.
So what would the claims be then? From the people that believe that it's not two blokes kicking about making them themselves, what would their claims be?
Well, aside from the obvious of this is the underside of landing craft coming down to abduct people or just monitor humanity, there's also the thought that they were kind of just projected down. Ghosty people believe that ghosts are made out of energy and can potentially be detected with EMF readers.
That's like one K2 of the meters. Things that some of them to say.
Yes. And so the alien...
They all have a lot of different stories. lot of different rules.
The alien equivalent of that is that crop circles or any place where UFOs have been has like a low level of radiation.
Right.
So ghosts, EMF, UFOs, radiation.
So if you go somewhere...
K2 versus Geiger counter.
Right, so with or without a crop circle even being there...
Yeah.
If someone has a Geiger counter and goes, oh, bit of radiation here,
they
can just go, and that proves that aliens have been here.
Yeah, and Chernobyl was a lie.
Do you know what I mean? Well, is it that ridiculous, though?
With any matter of esotericism, you can stretch things as far as you want because there are no boundaries.
Because there's no physics to it in reality. There's no proven physics to any of it. So the whole thing with EMF meters and all that sort of business, there's no proven physics. This is all... things that people have just said means that.
Yes.
But all of it is that.
But one of my favourite examples is one that you mentioned earlier that was Reg Presley from the Trogs.
Yeah.
Later in life, he developed a really serious obsession with aliens and crop circles in particular, like driving around the country to see these crop circles. And he joined forces with a retired driving instructor with the best name in England, Busty Taylor.
And he wasn't even...
No, quite flat-chested, really. And together, they joined to investigate crop circles.
Yeah.
They were like the Dempsey and Makepeace of the alien world.
I mean, he might have been a bit poorly, eh? Like, genuinely, though.
Yeah.
He might have been a bit poorly, old Reg. So, you know, there might have been... It's one of them. It's a difficult thing, I think, to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It seemed to bring him... a lot of joy.
Okay, I've no issue with that.
Yeah, and so even when like he was doing Trogs gigs around Europe, he would often like do the shows as a combination with a lecture.
Right, okay.
About crop circles and aliens.
Yeah.
But one of their interpretations of what crop circles meant was coded. Where were these last three crop circles? They were in Warminster, Wantage, and Winchester. And what do you get if you take the front parts of those places, you get war, want, win.
Hmm.
And that was a sign that aliens were going to attack. And it was Reg that got this message.
Right.
Again, I am reporting this.
This is like mediums again, isn't it? Like, for me, these loopholes and this sort of stuff is so glaring to me that I can't even fathom anybody giving it any credence whatsoever. I'm trying to, but I can't get my head around it. I can't get my head around when somebody goes to a medium how people aren't going, my grandma knows her middle name. Validate this by tell her to tell you her middle name.
Yeah.
Tell her to focus everything on that.
Mm.
Doesn't have to do it in a sentence. She literally just say that one word. Just say that.
Yeah.
And they can't.
Yeah.
Well, she's saying something about, was there a red door on the house? Tell her to tell you her middle name. She definitely knows it. So when it's anything that's like coded messages,
yes.
War, want, win, within this story, we're talking about technology that's way in advance of anything that the human world understands.
Yeah.
They can do that, but they can't write a letter.
Well, they clearly understand English
to
understand war, want, win.
Yeah, let's make out we're really thick.
Maybe they just don't have any paper in space, or the biros don't work.
What would the counter-argument be to that? If I just stood in front of these people and said, this is far too vague, and part of your claim is that they are very advanced.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that's where the interest in it comes from, because they're, you know, people will argue that these really elaborate designs are from these far-afield civilizations. And then on the other side of things, you've got arts collectives now that just do crop art. There's that weird Venn diagram going on. And then in the middle, you've got Reg Presley going, there's an aircraft hangar with a UFO in it underneath the Sphinx, and Sting needs to give me loads of money to chuck into a pot so we can go and find it.
Why the Sphinx, Reg?
I don't know.
Why have they built it there? That makes no sense.
Yeah, just before he died, he was convinced. And he couldn't understand why Sting wouldn't want to fund it. Him and Busty were going to go to Egypt.
Why the Sphinx?
I don't know.
And he just always wanted to go to the Sphinx.
It's very Thunderbirds, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. But it's like, you know, the classic argument about reincarnation and all that.
Mm.
That people, when they say they're reincarnated, they've always been reincarnated from...
Yeah, it's like 6,000 Cleopatras
exactly
wandering around at one time.
Yeah, exactly that. So maybe there's a bit of that. Or maybe it is, as you said, the Uri Geller thing.
Mm.
Maybe this was just a very impressive career prolongation that was going on.
Yeah.
Maybe Reg had just always wanted to go to the Sphinx.
Yeah.
And he just... Because they couldn't put it on a Trogs tour. Right, what venues do you want to do? Right, I want to do Barnsley Civic. Yeah. Somewhere a bit bigger. Maybe the Apollo in London. Yeah, yeah. And the Sphinx. We can't do that, Reg. Can we just try? If we just do 3 dates, can we make the last one the Sphinx? No, we can't. Well, then I'll have to try something else.
Yeah.
Did I mention there's an underground hangar? So was he saying that that had been made by the aliens?
I don't know. I think he was saying that it was like government storage facility.
So that I'm not having. That is riddled with loopholes. I'm not having that. There's hiding in plain sight.
Yes.
But to build something under one of the most recognisable tourist destinations and expect to keep it a secret, that's too far for me. If the claim is the Sphinx actually is part of the aliens structure, that is part of, you know, the pyramids, people talk about the pyramids and what's underneath the ground and all that sort of thing, that is, I can't believe I'm saying this, is actually more plausible logically within the fantasy story. That's more plausible than saying a government have gone, where should we build our aircraft hangar, stick it under Disney. Hardly anyone knows, they're not.
A ton of skeletons, though.
Yeah, yeah. But Area 51, I'd accept. You know what I mean? That, that whole thing of, like, out of the desert and what have you. I'm not having under the Sphinx. I'm not having that.
But the other story I wanted to tell you about.
Yes.
In June of 92, this massive, like, 36-metre diameter crop circle appeared near Budapest in Hungary. And it was seen by a helicopter pilot, because, again, impossible. All over the news, not just because it was a crop circle, but it was a crop circle in Hungary. Crop circles weren't Anglophiles anymore.
Oh, right, okay. No. Okay.
UFO experts were everywhere. Thousands of people camped out and visited this crop circle. And so there was loads of crop damage from the visitors, but from the UFO, all the stalks were bent again, not broken, showing that aliens had done it. And there was this chat show where these two, like, scientists, you know, scientific experts, came on to kind of stake their careers on the legitimacy of this crop circle.
Yeah.
And then they also, as a surprise guest, brought on two 17-year-old students.
Right.
Who were from a local agricultural college.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, aliens hadn't made it. These two lads had made it with a stick in 3 hours.
Now, can I go back to a loophole question, which is yes. a general thing about this as well?
Mm-hmm.
Because even in this discussion, we have tossed away
mm-hmm.
the phrase, they were bent, not broken.
Yes, yes, yes.
So even within the discussion we've had, mm-hmm. that has now become an accepted thing. It's like, oh, they were bent, not broken. But we've not looked at that closely.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to break straw? It always bends. It's one of those innocuous claims in a story that doesn't draw attention to itself.
Yes.
But when you actually look closer,
yeah.
you're like, hang on, what?
Yeah, just a little pocket of information that you carry with you.
Which, by the way, can you try and remind me to talk about that next week? Because
mm-hmm.
I have something about that in my little book of anti-ghost business.
Yes.
I have something that's very similar to that
okay.
that I have recognised in the telling of ghost stories.
Mm.
Of a little bit of innocuous information
okay.
that carries great weight.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example of it next week as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So these two kids come out.
They claimed that they did it.
Yeah.
And they also proved that they did it because they had taken pictures of the field before
okay.
and after they'd right, okay. made the circle. So yeah. there is cast iron proof that these two agricultural students made it. And the farm was not happy about this at all. They didn't join in with it because they had thousands of strangers camping out in their food field.
Right.
Yeah. So they took the lads to court.
Yeah.
And they sued them for what would have been about £5,000 in okay. damages. And the court ruled that the boys were only responsible for the circle. So for that damage, which worked out at about £47.
Oh, I see. So the damage was being caused by all the people that were flocking to see the cross circle.
Yeah.
I see.
And the thousands of visitors caused the rest.
Right.
How do you charge those people? But ultimately the TV show stepped in and just paid everything.
Right, okay.
But in January of 92, our good pal James Randi had visited Budapest for a prize giving. And when he was there, he founded like a $300 prize for a best investigation into paranormal phenomena, regardless of outcome, as long as you used scientific methods. And who should win the prize in 1993 but the crop circle kids.
Right, okay. I thought it was going to be a big reveal then. I thought you were going to say, but Yuri Geller.
Oh, gutted now, I'm sorry. But the kids won. And Randi was really impressed with them. It's the best type of pullback and reveal.
Well, I agree with that. And I liked James Randi, you know, when he was around and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but can we not reward vandals? I hear what you're saying, but they're just thugs, aren't they? They're little yobs.
People don't talk about Randi enough like this. He was funding crime.
He really was. That's amazing. One week you get misconstrued as idolising Yuri Geller.
Oh, God,
no. You get misconstrued as demonising James Randi.
I love James Randi. Please, please believe me.
I reckon we've not even got time for your celebrity sales this week.
Oh, no, what a shame. It's going to be squidged on at the end. You can't escape it.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it, actually, for my own reasons.
Yeah. This week on Celebrity Seance Corner.
That's not one of the things I look forward to.
It's not a DVD.
Right.
Or a record.
Okay.
Not even a singular seance.
Right.
It's a series of seances.
Okay, and how many of them are you going to tell us about?
50? Well, this week, I thought we'd have a chat about the Houdini seances.
Okay, I know a little bit about it. Not much, but I know a bit about it. Because this is one of those times, correct me if I'm wrong, where, and this has happened a few times with people of note, where they have stated pre-mortem that they are going to contact relatives post-mortem.
Yes.
And if they don't, then they can't.
Yeah.
And I think there are a few examples of that.
Yeah, plenty.
Okay. Houdini was one of those people, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Houdini, aside from being an escapologist and a magician, was a big debunker of spiritualists.
Yeah.
And kind of towards the end of his career, while he was still doing his escapology business, he kind of wanted to be remembered for his work in debunking and exposing fraudulent, manipulative mediums or people in spiritualism who are exploiting people.
Well, Randi was a similar fish, eh?
Yeah, well, Randi was a huge fan of Houdini. Magician, escapologist, is on the record for saying that he was such a massive fan of Houdini.
Was he? Okay.
That he wanted to be in that milk churn for longer. He wanted to just try and one-up his idol.
A lot of people fixated on Houdini. A lot of people, particularly magicians and things, but people in entertainment generally. Like I know, for example, there was a time, there was an awful scene at Graceland once where Elvis shouted through, went, Simba, come through, please. And Simba just pattered through, because at this stage in his captivity, he wasn't allowed shoes. So he pattered through, and Elvis was stood there, and Simba was taken aback. Simba went, King, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because Elvis was stood there.
Yeah.
Nothing on his top, only a pair of little skimpy briefs on the bottom, right? Like, tensing his stomach.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Simba, punch me in the stomach. Simba said, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do that. Simba, punch me in the stomach. And then, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Simply didn't punch him in the stomach at that point. But months later, in his alleged captivity, Simply just walked into a room one day and just punched Elvis in the stomach. And Elvis wasn't ready for it.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And they had to concoct a story about him dying on the toilet.
When really it was peritonitis.
It's a huge similarities with the demise of Houdini, who I believe died in a very similar way.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
When he had a thing that he could take a punch to the stomach.
Yeah.
But then when somebody just came and smacked him in the stomach, he was like, well, no, I can do it when I'm ready.
Yeah.
Which is essentially what happened with Houdini. And, you know, when you sort of think nowadays about how people talk to people and how people act with the famous people and all that sort of stuff, it's not changing much, really, is it? It's like, no, do you not understand what I'm doing? They said, I'm a showman. They said, you can't just come and punch me in the stomach.
Well, back to the seances.
Yeah.
So.
I just thought that my story was an interesting story.
It's a fascinating and heartbreaking story.
Punch me in the stomach, simply.
I mean, it does, as tragic as it is, I think it would make a brilliant badge.
That was the noise he'd do. As he tensed already. I'm really simply. Punch me in the stomach.
Houdini?
Yeah.
Died in 1926.
Yeah, because he was punched in the stomach.
He was punched in the stomach.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So he was a skeptic, but he wasn't really a complete disbeliever in the potential of life after death. So him and his wife, Bess, agreed that whoever died first would use a particular phrase.
Right.
To signal that it was them during a seance.
Yeah.
I thought it would be something really beautiful and poetic, you know, like, oh, my love is like a red, red rose.
Right.
It's just really complicated. And it was one that they'd used years before in their vaudeville mind reading act.
Okay.
And the phrase was, Rosabel, answer, tell, pray, answer, look, tell, answer, tell.
Has to be that. That's perfect.
Yes.
That is perfect. Mm-hmm. It has to be that. Because no one's guessing that. Mm-hmm. No one's fluking that.
Yeah.
No chance. So that's completely right.
Yeah, that's what you should do.
Yeah. Not say, if I can contact you,
yeah.
Go to a medium on Valentine's night. If I'm there, I'll tell you that I love you. That's what I'll do.
But
that's no use to anyone.
No.
Give sporadic words.
But in that weird little collection of letters, each word kind of corresponded to a letter. So when it was in the right order, it spelled out the word believe.
Right. Okay, so that makes absolute sense.
Yes.
That's actually a scientific approach to this.
Yeah, that was the setup. And so Houdini died in 1926 on Halloween. So already a bit spooky.
Right. Was it a giddy trick-or-treater that smacked him in the stomach?
Yeah, they wanted full-size Mars
bars. Mr. Houdini, trick-or-treat! I'm going to go with trick. Oh my God, what did you... You said you could take it and say, yeah, but when I'm ready! Only when I'm ready, that really hurt.
You make me feel really sad for Houdini.
Oh, it's horrible what happened. I'm actually not even making light of it, but I am. I suppose I am, but I'm not meaning to in that way. It's horrible.
It is. He seemed like such a nice bloke. So the seances would provide they were a double whammy as well. Not only would it be a chance for Houdini to come back and have a chat.
Yeah.
It was big publicity, really, to keep the Houdini legacy alive and the Houdini name alive.
Yuri Geller.
Mm-hmm. And so from 27 onwards, for 10 years, they had a seance every Halloween. And there was nothing in 27, in 28. But in 29, Bess was approached by a young up-and-coming medium called Arthur Ford. After meeting her, in just a matter of weeks, he'd had a chat with Houdini and brought back the message perfectly.
Really?
Word for word perfect. Okay. Exactly. However...
Oh, thank goodness for that. Yeah.
Bess had, let's say accidentally, revealed this super snappy phrase.
That she written at the back of one of the business cards.
Just a slip of the tongue, you know.
Yeah.
Revealed it to reporters.
Right. Okay.
Years before. And so the whole thing was compromised.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So no matter how many seances would happen and these messages would come through, she'd already told everyone.
I mean, it makes you wonder about the prep of the first two.
Yeah.
If it was actually on the record somewhere. Pre-internet though, wasn't it? You couldn't just Google these things.
No,
you couldn't.
So yeah, they did it for 10 years.
And every last one of them had got it.
But although, like, officially, there was only, like, a decade of seances after Houdini died.
Mm.
After that, because he was so influential, magicians around the world, ever since, have taken up the torch and made it an annual event in their magic clubs. And so still today, you'll get Houdini seances every Halloween.
But they're not trying to contact Houdini because they know that they can't. So that is it more of a...
I think there's a bit of a mix.
Bread and wine sort of thing going on here.
Well... Funny you should mention bread and wine.
Why?
Because at the Magic Castle, which is like the big private, you know, members-only magic club in America, they do a immersive theatre experience on the Houdini seance, and they've still got the menus online.
Okay.
So it looked like a really nice evening, but it's also $225 per person.
Okay.
With an extra $35 if you want a wine pairing.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
So that was a textbook what you just did then. It was like a medium, wasn't it? I said bread and wine. And you went, oh, well, funny you should mention that. It's like, because I've got the word wine a bit later on in a sentence.
Spot the loophole in Big Man.
I was genuinely expecting there to be some sort of relevance.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Because I was getting ready to say, oh, that's going to sound like I knew about this before. But it was just, it was nothing. It was literally, you saw a menu online that had wine on it.
Yeah, but I mean...
There was no connection at all.
My main problem was, if you pay in, like, 200 quid...
Yeah. Can I, at this point, quote some of the feedback that we got this week? One from Mark Sharma Cuthbert, who said, so far, I'm absolutely loving this new podcast, not diminishing any other podcast in the slightest, but it's super refreshing and still slightly surprising to have Ian ask a question and get an intelligent, well-researched answer in response.
Tell me that isn't well-researched. I've looked up wine lists.
But you can't go, it's funny you mentioned bread and wine.
Look, please, Mark.
I was on about in church when they do that, and it represents the body of Christ. That's what I thought was going to be the comparison. Not, you could get wine at a seance if you paid an extra 30 quid. Don't give us hope like that.
Well, Bess said it best when, I think she said, Houdini did not come through. I do not believe that Houdini can come back to me or to anyone.
And did Beth not say when she made that statement, however, if he did come through, we've agreed he's going to say this. There we go. That was Loopholes episode 3. Thank you for joining us as always. If you want to contact us, you can contact us on Facebook, Loopholes Podcast on Facebook. You can email us at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. On Instagram, it's loopholespod. On Twitter, it's also loopholespod. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Boldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Boldsworth.